Happy Monday. Welcome to another episode of the Saxo Market Call podcast. As always, I am your host and my name is Søren Otto. And actually, we're recording this on Friday afternoon and I am joined by no other than our head of the equity strats and also equity strategy, Peter Garnery. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Søren. How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine, thanks. Looking forward to the weekend. How about you?
Very much.
Definitely hope you're coming in with a better Monday energy than we are now. Looking forward to the weekend. And I should say we're recording this on Friday because Charu couldn't be here Monday as she's traveling to Japan and obviously hope she has a great time. But today we are going to talk about macro. We're going to talk mainly about stuff that happened in this week or in last week when you're hearing it. There's the US CPI. There's also an ECB meeting. There's some Chinese import and export numbers. And we're going to talk about what that meant. And we're also going to look ahead to this week where we have a few European numbers, for instance, the inflation figures. But we also got to realize that this week is probably going to be most about the earnings season, and we will cover that on Tuesday. But Peter, let's just jump straight into it. Last week, we saw a US CPI, and once again, it performed pretty well, we must say, and the markets reacted. So what's your take on it?
Well, I think it proves that the old saying that that inflation is a little bit like a cat, right? So when it's out of the bag, it's very difficult to get the cat back into the bag. I think that's proven to be true. I think there are circumstances in the US that are a little bit different from Europe, and that is that the fiscal impulse is significantly higher in the US than in Europe. It's almost twice as big. That obviously reverberates through the economy. Wage dynamics, the tight labor market is very tight in the US. So I think it just proves that the market was wrong 3 months ago. So if you look at the reaction to the US CPI report, the inflation report, the market took rate cuts down even further. So now we're down to pricing, you know, one rate cut and then maybe a 50-50 on a second rate cut, which is pretty dramatic. So we've moved almost 150 basis points in 3 weeks. In 3 months, it's quite extraordinary.
It is a lot, and I mean, I know you say that there's some different circumstances in the US and in Europe, but nonetheless, the story more or less repeats itself in Europe. We had the ECB meeting last week as well, where they also, it wasn't expected that they would cut rates, but they didn't, and are talking into this June rate cut. What is the differences as you see it in the US and Europe?
Well, the big difference is that in Europe we don't have a coordinated mechanism between fiscal and monetary. So the US can issue debt and buy their own debt; they can monetize it. That's not possible within the EU, so the Euro framework. So there is the difference, and we have quite strict rules in the EU on how big deficits you can run. So that's one of the main differences, and also the difference that Jamie Dimon, the CEO of JP Morgan, touched on, and with the fiscal differences. And one of the ECB board members, Soranas, he said as well that it is time for monetary policy to diverge, and thereby he laid the groundwork for the ECB to be a first mover on rate cuts, which is extraordinary and quite rare in the monetary policy we've had since 2008.
Yeah, and I mean that is it's almost historic, right? We have really been used to the Fed being the one who is moving first, and it's generally dictating how we're doing, especially in Europe, but more or less throughout the world.
Yeah, exactly. So it's going to be super interesting, and the big trouble, of course, that came out of that CPI report was that if you take 3 or 6 months averages on the items that you can categorize as super core. So you're looking at the services sector and you strip out energy, you strip out the shelter component from it. Then we are talking about inflation at 4.5%. And if you include shelter, you take the US services and only exclude energy, then the services sector is seeing inflation very close to 6%. So it is pretty dramatic in the US, and there are still it's like a wave effect. So I think we're still going through these waves, and they will get smaller and smaller. I've been saying in so many client presentations over the past 1.5 years that it's very, very difficult to predict where's the floor basically on the inflation rate, and it's definitely not as low as people thought. The question is, where is that floor going to be?
Yeah, and it is just interesting in relation to this rate cut concept, because in theory you should only cut the rates when the economy is slowing down, but it doesn't look like that's the case.
No, and a lot of people have been pointing to the correct fact, but it's which is that the U.S. government is clearly growing their public debt much faster than the nominal economy, which in itself is unsustainable. The current interest rate level, as the Congressional Budget Office has also shown with their calculations, will eat up a larger and larger part of the U.S. Government budget, which will mean a couple of things. Either the U.S. government will have to raise taxes. That's a very difficult exercise in the U.S. if you want to maintain your power. The other way you can get around it is by monetizing your debt, but then you risk your currency's integrity in global markets. Or the third option, which is also a suicide goal, if you will, is cutting welfare services for your population. So I think the U.S. increasingly going forward will be in a very difficult spot. And I think how is it relevant for the equity market, just very quickly, is that you have this symmetry that when the government is running a very large deficit, that deficit shows up as a surplus somewhere else in the economy, and that's typically in the private sector. So the U.S. government will be forced at one point, I think, to rein in all this fiscal spending. And if we get back to the 3% long-term average, that would mean a 300 basis point negative impulse from the fiscal side, and that would be a tough pill to swallow for the private sector, because that would mean pressure on profit growth going forward. I don't think we're not there yet. It's not imminent, because as we've talked about in previous podcasts, son, this is a historical election year, right? So, and the election will keep the steam going until we get into the final weeks of this year. And then I think things are shaping up to be pretty exciting in 2025.
It is going to be an exciting year. But let's stick to last week just for a little bit.
Yep.
We also had the import and export numbers out of China. And China's been an interesting case this year. In the beginning, we talked about they were really in trouble economically. But then over Chinese New Year, we saw some positive signs. But really, the numbers that came out last week, they didn't look too good.
No, and it was a little bit odd, because the Chinese equity market had actually had a pretty good week, a couple of good weeks, talk about this rebound. And there's just something fishy about China right now. You have a couple of stocks that almost overnight falls 90%. You have the government talking about even more control over the stock market behavior. They're doing all the stimulus, doesn't seem to work. Still have the situation in the real estate market. It's just, and then we had all the green shoots from that we're seeing in Europe, and we had some green shoots in China. But then, as you were correctly said, I mean, the import export numbers, if you look at the export numbers year on year in China, they're going south again, which is not good news for the global economy. And it goes into this dynamic that the CEO of Maersk, the world's largest shipping company, said the other day, that you know, there's just a lot of excess capacity in Chinese factories. You can get a pretty good deal in China. So right now, inflation in goods is not a problem, because China is willing to produce extremely cheap because they need to have those factories running, right? And it talks into the last subject we need to talk about today on macro, son, and that is, there is an increasing chatter about a potential Chinese devaluation coming, just like just like in 2015/2016, when you had the so-called Shanghai Accord, where, you know, they agreed to China to devalue their currency. This time around, the dynamic is very different, because if you take the offshore Chinese currency, the CNH, and you compare it to the Japanese yen, that cross traded at 15 in mid-2020. And now we're trading at a record high and approaching 21.5, right? So that's a significant deterioration in China's competitiveness with Japan. And as we have talked about on this podcast, Japanese equities and Japan as a whole is going through very exciting times. As you know, I think it was the FT that recently had, or the Economist that had, this front page or article talking about Japan is back as a normal economy. And they are taking market share from China, because a lot of companies are very much afraid about China, what they are pursuing in the South Chinese South Sea, and everything related to Taiwan. You see it with TSMC. They are diversifying their manufacturing footprint. A lot of companies are doing that. Apple has just doubled their production intention in India as well. So there's a lot of things going on. And finally, Søren, gold and silver and platinum is just on a tear, right? If you look at gold, it's just setting record after record. And we know the Chinese central bank is buying up gold. But as Ole said, it's quite extraordinary and very unusual to see gold being, you know, rallying this hard, given you have one, a strong dollar, two, very high interest rates. It feels a little bit like the gold market, the precious metals market, is seeing something in the system that neither the equity market or the bond market is seeing. And what it is, I don't know. There's just some forces at play right now in the global economy and the macro in the macro world that doesn't fit together.
And that is obviously extremely exciting. And maybe we should see if we can dive our way into that. Maybe we need to go on an interrogation of sorts, but we'll do that another time. For now, let's look at the coming week and what kind of macro figures we have there. It is slightly slow week. It is at least a very European-dominated week. We have, as I said, European and UK inflation figures. We also have some other European figures. What are you paying attention to this week, Peter?
I think from a macro perspective, I'm very much, and I wrote last week, there's a grandiose, as you called it in our previous podcast.
Really getting some flack for that.
Yeah, the investment case for European equities. And there I laid the groundwork for why Europe is interesting. And if you look over the past 3 months, the US economy has actually slowed down a little bit, whereas the European economy has accelerated. The European economy is still in a recession, but it's accelerating. There are green shoots. These green shoots are for real. Whether they can materialize in meaningful economic growth, time will tell. But the trajectory is in the right, is going the right way. And we have a CDW, which is this, one of these leading surveys on the economy and investor expectations as well, coming out of the CDW Institute of in Germany. And that figures out on Tuesday. I think actually from a market perspective, that's what I'm going to look at. And then, as correctly as you said, we have also a UK CPI report. UK is this little bit weird economy that sits as a sort of an offspring to the European economy, and it's sort of living a little bit its own life now that they left the EU. And you know, they have a different set of issues on their hand that is yeah. So you have the EU on the one hand, you have the US, and then you have actually the UK as well, which is, and that is the fascinating thing about this world, that it is diverging, it is fragmenting, it's not as synchronized as it was before.
And that obviously is also of interest to investors alike. Another thing that will be of attention this week, Peter, is the earnings season. It kicked off last week with financials. Obviously, this week it's gonna heat up. We both have some interesting American, but also European companies coming out. For instance, ASML, is that the one you're going to pay attention to if you had to pick one? Because you say that, I mean, maybe it's more interesting to look at Europe right now.
Yeah, it is ASML. And it was a wonderful article recently done by Bloomberg, where politicians are getting increasingly frustrated in Washington and Beijing that you cannot produce the most advanced chips in the world without European technology. And you're laughing. And I laughed this morning as well. It is, what an extraordinary conundrum, right?
Yeah.
We talk about the American exceptionalism. We talk about China playing catch up. And none of all this catch up or exceptionalism is possible without the technology of ASML. They have a 100% monopoly in extreme ultraviolet lithography, and then a 70% market share in less advanced lithography machines. This is an extraordinary company. It's an extraordinary story. We can talk more about that company later, Søren, maybe in more equity-related podcast. But that earnings is out on Wednesday, and then on Thursday we have Netflix, which is, you know, kickstarting sort of the technology sector. I don't view Netflix as much as a technology company as probably in the past, but because it's video streaming, and I think it's that category is beginning to live a very different life than what we perceive as being technology today. But nevertheless, it's always a very interesting company, and they're doing a lot of things to massively improve their profitability, which is exciting.
And had a pretty exciting earnings last time. But Peter, that was everything for me, and as you say, We have another equity episode coming out Tuesday, so I'm sure we'll cover the earnings season in much more detail there. But apart from that, Peter, thank you for making us all a little bit smarter, and have a great weekend.
You too, son.
And to all of you out there, on behalf of Peter Gonnery, the Saxo Market Call podcast, everybody here at Saxo, my name is Søren Otto. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back anytime soon. And until then, happy trading.